I'll be reading from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Brother Ray mentioned about the hymns that we sang tonight. I was thinking about that. I believe number 27 and number 20 are probably two of the most used hymns in that green book. Especially number 20. You know, we were studying in our Sunday school that in the book of Hebrews about the perfect sacrifice Jesus was, and that hymn number 20 sort of fits in with that. He was the perfect sacrifice for us, for our sins. 1 Corinthians 13, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, does not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. So we kneel for prayer.
Very thankful for the prayer of Uncle Donald, as well as each of you who have prayed for me this evening. Appreciate that, and we need that. We were unable to be here this morning due to requirements to be somewhere else, but I was sorry I missed it. Brother Merle speaking this morning and on a Mother's Day sermon, so I'm sure you were blessed by being here. And I was certain, or at least pretty sure, we'd have a Mother's Day sermon, so I was not intending to really bring that this evening, although my thoughts, or the thoughts that are on my mind and heart, can be towards our homes in particular, but not just limited there. So we'll go from there. And if you're looking for a title, I would say Living Out Love. It's impressive the way Nelson Bell, who was a medical missionary to China from 1916 to 1941, the love that he shown. Those days were days of political unrest in China, and foreigners faced animosity. And at first, the Chinese called him a foreign devil. But Bell lovingly and prayerfully treated their ills and injuries and showed them the love of Christ. And by the end of his service in China, he was called the Bell, that being his last name, the Bell who is lover of the Chinese people. Nelson and his wife, Virginia, had a long and harmonious marriage. In older age, his wife needed a lot of care. And one day, his daughter, Ruth, that's Billy Graham's wife, or she's deceased now, but it was his wife, Ruth, entered her parents' home and found her father on his hands and knees. He was putting Virginia's stockings on her, and looking up, Nelson said, "You know, the greatest privilege of my life is taking care of your mother. Love in action. It would seem that Nelson Bell's life was one that focused on living out love. And during my life, I've been impressed by those who have this kind of love for a spouse, where it has been evident that a husband and a wife had a special love for each other. And they lived out their love and their relationship. And today we honor mothers, and our mothers have lived out love for us. And what a blessing that's been in our lives. And some of you still have a mother present or living. Don't neglect the opportunity to share your heart with her. As believers, there is a special kind of love, though, that we are to be living out in our lives. It's called agape love. It's a love that comes from God and that only true believers can really live out in their lives because of the nature of it. It's a love that is like God's love. It's a love that, when defined here in 1 Corinthians 13, is really describing the character of Jesus Christ and who Christ is. Ephesians 5, 1 and 2, verse 1 says, "Be ye therefore," now this is a command in the text, and so keep this in mind, "be ye therefore followers or imitators of God as dear children." And the next verse says, "And walk in love," agape love, "as Christ also hath loved," again the word, the Greek word agape, "us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor." We are commanded by God to be an imitator of him. And 1 John 4:8 says, "He that loveth," again agape, "not knoweth," or "he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love." Again, the word agape. So we are commanded by God to be an imitator of him, and we are to live out this love as Christ has. And we are to imitate Christ, meaning to become like him means we will become more loving, which is characteristic of Jesus. The more we become like Christ, the more this agape love will be lived out in our lives. And 1 Corinthians 13 tells, it's a very familiar, I realize, that chapter. It tells us about this love and what it should and what it should not look like in our lives. And this love is for all relationships, all aspects of our lives. It's agape love is not simply just a gushy feelings. I think it can involve them, and hopefully at times it does. But that's not what it's all about. It's a love that must act. It's a love of action. A love that doesn't just feel, but it does something. You know, we all can say sometimes, "Well, I really feel for that person," and then do nothing to help them. That's not agape love. Agape love is a love of action. It does something. It doesn't just feel, but it does something. Brother Harold, in his 1 Corinthians commentary, says this, and I quote, "Agape love is the result of a commitment of the will, a deliberate choice to treat another person with concern, care, and thoughtfulness," end quote. It's a love that's practical. It's what we should be demonstrating in our homes and in our church and in our places of work and places of play and any interaction we have with others, believers and unbelievers alike. They are to see agape love coming out of us, being displayed, being lived out from day to day. Well, the first three verses of 1 Corinthians 13 tell us that the result when this agape love is missing, and maybe I'll read them quickly just to, with our thoughts here, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have not the gift," let me say that again, "and though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing." Some great things are listed here, aren't they? Some mighty great things. Some important things. But if they're done or possessed without agape love at work, we are as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. In other words, a lot of noise that doesn't have a lot of value. We are nothing, verse 2 says, or we are not profited by it, according to verse 3. So some very important things that if agape love is missing, they just kind of fall back and lose their significance, so to speak, or at least don't have the value to us as they should. Verses 4 through 7, agape love is described. And, you know, we may measure our lives as to how we're doing and living life by various ways. A lot of different ways, as a matter of fact. However, I believe that there's no standard of measurement that is more revealing than the standard of agape love, and how am I doing compared to that? As we consider how agape love is defined here, remember that Jesus lived it to perfection. He lived it out to perfection. It's a picture of him. Well, we'll start, and if you're worried, don't worry. It won't take too long. I don't have a lot of notes to say on each of these things, but there's a lot of characteristics that describe and tell us about this love. First of all, it says that charity suffereth long. Love is patient. Patient with people. It means being long-suffering with others. It means waiting on someone when it's costing me time. Now, that's a tough one today for some of us, because we're in a time-sensitive age, and everything is time issues, and, you know, I got to get this done quickly. I need to be somewhere else. Why don't they get out of my way? Why don't they go faster? It means waiting on someone when it's costed me time or keeping me from doing what I want to do. This love is long-suffering with those who mistreat us, possibly over and over again. They may mistreat us over and over again, but it's a love that is, this agape love is one that is patient and long-suffering with them. Those who may accuse us, whether it's or falsely represent us. Christ demonstrated this kind of love to those who cruelly mistreated him. Consider also God's patience and how he displays this agape love on our behalf and on others in this world. Robert Ingersoll, the well-known atheist of the last century, often would stop in the middle of his lectures against God. He was lecturing against God. And he would say, "I'll give God 5 minutes to strike me dead for the things I've said." He then used the fact that he was not struck dead as proof that God did not exist. But Theodore Parker said of Ingersoll's claim, "And did the gentleman think he could exhaust the patience of the eternal God in 5 minutes? I like that, but I wouldn't want to test him. He was simply saying, "Look, God is that patient, that is that long-suffering. Do you think you're going to exhaust it by saying, 'God, if you don't strike me dead in 5 minutes, that proves you're not so?'" Is there a patient, long-suffering atmosphere in our homes? Secondly, love is kind. The Greek word means to show oneself useful. It is concerned about the welfare of others. It acts to benefit another's welfare. It speaks of serving others and acting in a pleasant, considerate way. This agape love that is kind gives and gives and gives. Gives of itself. How is the atmosphere of our home? John MacArthur writes on this thought, and I quote, "The first test of Christian kindness and the test of every aspect of love is the home. The Christian husband who acts like a Christian is kind to his wife and children. Christian brothers and sisters are kind to each other and to their parents. They have more than kind feelings towards each other. They do kind, helpful things for each other to the point of loving self-sacrifice when necessary," end quote. And I believe that's true. Now, I understand that that's general. We all fail. There's times when children don't get along. We don't do what we should do. But in general, that should be the atmosphere of the Christian home, and one of kindness. this agape love be in evidence. Well, love is not jealous or envious. The Greek word there for envieth means to have warmth, a feeling for or against. It means to desire. It can be really a good desire or a bad one. But obviously in this context, it's the negative side. I mean, in a negative way, it means to want something that someone else has that we don't. Or to wish someone to lose what they have that we don't. I'm jealous of that person. I either want what they have that I don't, or I wish they'd lose it since I don't have it. Agape love is not like that. It understands that there are those who can do things better than I can or than we can. There are those that are better looking, that are more talented and more popular. Agape love understands that. It is not jealous or envious. It does not respond with feelings of ill will towards the other people. In our homes, agape love has no room for harmful sibling rivalries. Love does not envy, is not jealous of others. Well, fourthly, love does not boast about itself. Vaunteth, the word is used there and where it says charity, vaunteth not itself, means to boast. It does. In other words, love does not build itself up. Love does not bring or does not brag about how good it is at something and how successful it is. C.S. Lewis called bragging the utmost evil. It is the epitome of pride, which is the root sin of all sins. You have to listen to this, and you kind of got to think about it to understand that. I believe it makes sense. Bragging puts ourselves first. Everyone else, including God, must therefore be of less importance to us. It is impossible to build ourselves up without putting others down. Think about that. If I'm putting myself up, I have to be putting somebody else down. Has to be. When we brag, we can be up only if others are down. That's the end quote there, C.S. Lewis. Most of us, I think tonight, if we would be honest, we don't appreciate being around a braggart. Yet how prone we are. And so easily, how quickly we can do it ourselves. Love does not boast about itself. Love is not puffed up. It goes hand in hand with the previous one. It means love is not haughty or proud. It does not become proud. When one is haughty or proud, one is arrogant. The thinking that I'm better or more important than other people. Arrogancy. I think we all would say that we don't appreciate being around people that are arrogant. And yet, again, we can find ourselves doing the same thing or feeling the same way. With families, it can be thinking that our family is better than another or better than others. And we have to understand that all families are not the same. Families are different. But agape love does not contain that kind of attitude that says, we're better than you. What do we have that we haven't received? Well, that is answered in 1 Corinthians 4. Paul answered that in reference here to the Corinthians. He says, verse 6, and these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that ye might learn in us not to think of men above that which is written. Why? That no one of you be puffed up for one against another. He says, for who maketh thee to differ from another? Or who distinguishes thee? Who maketh you different than the next guy? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now, if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? And what he's saying is, look, you might be different than someone else, but why do you have reason to glory about that? Because who made you that way or who gave it to you? God. So God ultimately gets the glory, not me. God made us different. And we all are important to God, and we should see each other that way. Love is not puffed up. Proverbs 8:13 tells us what God thinks about pride and arrogance. It says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate. One writer said, arrogance is big-headed and love is big-hearted. I like that. Arrogance is big-headed and love is big-hearted. I think that's true. We're talking about how we are to live out this agape love and how it will look in our lives and how it won't look. Well, going on, love does not act inappropriate or unacceptable. Love acts properly around others. The thought there, and let me get back to 1 Corinthians 13, does not behave itself unseemly. Certainly included here are moral standards and acting properly around others. But it doesn't stop there. It involves this idea of acting appropriately and acceptable and a proper way around others. And I'd like to consider it in this realm, and especially, maybe it's a different side of it, but I think we need to adhere to it. In the book Christian Ethics for Youth, you can find this. It's called The Parable of the Manners. Maybe you've heard it. But each one of these, their last name is manners. It says that now it came to pass that please, in other words, please manners, thank you manners, you're welcome manners, excuse me manners, and I'm sorry manners. They all had the last name of manners. They went out to find a home. And at last they came to a big farmhouse. The name on the mailbox said Mr. and Mrs. Christian. This looks like a nice place, and the name sounds good, said please. Let us go in and see if we can be of use here. They quietly slipped in the front door and tiptoed toward the kitchen. All was quiet as Mr. Christian asked a blessing on the food. Well, sighed thank you, happily, just in time for a meal. I'll be of use here. Then there was a great commotion. Give me the peas, said a masculine voice. I want bread and butter with jelly, demanded an adolescent voice. What is this awful looking stuff in the yellow bowl, growled a teenager. And so it went until the manners shrank back into a corner. Sadly, they shook their heads. These people surely had forgotten their manners. A loud burp sent, excuse me, crawling under the nearest chair. And he stayed there, trying to plug his ears as one after another, the little Christians noisily jumped up and left the table. Thank you crawled under Father Christian's chair, hoping he might be used to thank Mother for the meal. Instead, he heard, I sure hope you don't burn the meat next week when company comes. Then Father Christian went off and read the paper. Thank you, backed off, never once being used. As Mother Christian gave orders to clean up, please waited patiently by. When Junior bumped into Amanda, knocking a glass from her hand and sending it crashing into the floor, I'm sorry, was ready and waiting, but instead of using I'm sorry, Junior shouted, stay out of my way, dummy. After some discussion, the manners quietly left the house of Mr. and Mrs. Christian, totally unnoticed and never missed. They all breathed sighs of relief when once again, out in the fresh, quiet air, somehow their concept of Christianity had drastically changed during their visit at the Christian's house. Now that may be a little humorous, but the point of it is to be well taken, I think, by all of us. The importance that love acts in a proper way. And the importance of good quality manners still being in our homes and in our lives. Outside of our homes. Love is considerate. Agape love is gracious to others instead of having rude and distasteful actions. Where should good manners be evident? Well, certainly with believers. One child offered this prayer to God. He said this. He said, Lord, help bad people to be good and help good people to be nice. That's a pretty good prayer. Well, love is not selfish. Seeketh not her own. Love does not put itself ahead of others. Love does not have to have its own way in a home, in a marriage, when one person thinks it always has to be their way, what they want, and they get upset if they don't get it, you're going to have problems. There will be problems. There will be conflicts. Love is not selfish. It cares about others. It looks to the other's interests. Love is not easily provoked or angered. Just, let's see, Friday, I was pulling out. We didn't have school Friday. I was driving and pulling out at an intersection and a light. And in front of me was a couple vehicles waiting to make a left-hand turn to come into where I was, and I was pulling to go right. There was one car, I think it was a woman driving, and another behind it. And they were waiting on the light to get, and this lady was just waiting, I guess didn't seem to be moving quick enough for the car behind her. And I noticed after I was pulling out or so that the car behind her just zoomed, shot in front of her, made the left-hand turn before she could. Dangerous, but easily provoked, couldn't wait. Love is not easily provoked or angered. A young man microwaved some eggs in their shells for 5 minutes. I wouldn't advise you do that. While bringing them to the table, 6 exploded, singeing his face and severely burning his corneas. That's an explosion that you don't want to happen in your home. But neither should there be anger outbursts. Explosions of people being provoked, tempers flying. Living out agape love leaves no room for these kind of actions. Well, we're at number 9. We're going to make it, I think, Lord willing. Love forgives, thinketh no evil, has the idea of taking an inventory. It doesn't keep a record of wrongs. In other words, love doesn't keep an inventory. It doesn't take a record or keep a record. Agape love doesn't hold a grudge. You know, I share with couples and marriage counseling that you're going to need a lot of this. You're going to need to forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive. And that the most forgiving person that I know, other than my Lord, is my wife. We need that. Agape love forgives. Love forgives. Love is... Number 10, beginning of verse, rejoices not in iniquity. Love is not cheerful when others fall to sinful actions, but is happy when the truth and righteousness prevail. Agape love does not wallow in and take pleasure in the sins of others, or that somebody is failing and I'm further ahead than they are. That's not agape love. It's happy when the truth and righteousness prevail. Love beareth all things. The word beareth there means to roof over, to cover with silence. Love doesn't broadcast another's faults and failures and sins, but it seeks to protect the person rather than proclaiming their problems. Think about it. When you love somebody and there's how we try to protect them, and you try to protect them from other people, so you're not going to broadcast their failures and their slip-ups and let everybody know about it, but we cover it over. We're silent because we're looking to protect the person. It's agape love. Doesn't mean that we don't appropriately deal with it, but it doesn't broadcast it. Love wants to protect a person from hurt, unnecessary hurt. Proverbs 10:12 gives a measuring stick to determine how much we love someone. It says, hatred stirreth up strife, but love covereth. Puts a roof over it. Covereth all sins. Oh, I'm at number 12. I don't know if I've been saying each number, but it doesn't matter, I guess. Love believeth all things. Takes the high road. Love takes the high road. When there's a rumor or accusation about a person, love first believes the best about the person before it reaches for the worst. It believeth, takes the high road, gives the person a benefit of a doubt until proven differently. Love hopeth all things. Love does not lose hope. It expects something good to happen. I believe it's Brother Harold in his commentary says it's not this wish or like a wishful kind of thinking. It's a hope of expecting something good to happen. Even when one fails or leaves us down, love does not lose that hope. Hopeth all things. Number 14. Endureth all things. In other words, love will not stop loving. Agape love will not stop loving, but will persevere and endure all things. It will keep on. And number 15, which kind of follows up on that, is the beginning of verse 8. Charity never faileth. Love will never fail. Agape love will never fail. Other things will end, but love is eternal. I want you to think about something. We say we can't take anything. We can't take anything with us. Listen, agape love we can take with us from this side of eternity to the other side, because that will be continuing through eternity, because it's the love of God that'll be evident. This agape love, and it's something we can carry with us. It'll last throughout all eternity. You realize that prophecies aren't going to matter then. Different things that tongues are going to cease. There won't be any need for those in heaven. These things aren't going to be needed. But agape love continues on, because it's God's love. And it'll be evident in eternity. And it'll be expressed in its perfection by those with the Lord. This is the kind of love that is to be evident in a believer's life. We are to be living it out each day. I failed a lot. I fail a lot at it. This has got to be the goal. And we have to see this as this is the command. This is what needs to be coming out of our lives in a day-by-day living. Becoming more like Christ. Displaying his kind of agape love in our homes, at work, wherever we are. You know, we are really without excuse, because this agape love of Christ himself has touched us so personally as believers. Think about it. Think about it, because one person expressed it this way. And when you think about it this way, it leaves us without excuse. Even, not to mention that we're commanded to do it. But think about it this way. We are without excuse not to have agape love pouring out of us. The writer said, I'm amazed, speaking to the Lord, that you love me. I'm amazed how you care. How you, through your precious blood, I found pardon. That's because of God's agape love. And my sins, they're all washed away. That's because of his agape love. He goes on to say, yes, it's true. There have been days when I've failed you. Lord, you know the many times I've gone astray. But I've learned, and I have learned this, that your love is stronger than my weakness. And your ear is opened every time I pray. No one else has ever cared for me like you, Lord. No one. My wife cares for me. It's amazing the way she cares for me and my family. And you care for me. I believe that. But no one has ever cared for me like the Lord. And no one's ever cared for you like he has cared for you. It says other friends could never be as close to me. And when you think about that, that's the agape love that the Lord has expressed to you personally and on my life. That's not supposed to happen, is it? But it's that he has expressed it and has shown it, and it's evident, and all my sins are washed away, and he cares for me like no one else, and I am without excuse, and so are you if we're not showing agape love and displaying it and living it out, because he has revealed it and poured it out on us, and we thank him for that.
appreciate Brother Dwayne telling what love should be, what love we should have. I am just a little bit afraid sometimes that I need improvement in this line. But I'm glad that he, at the end, told us the greatest example. My brother David, some of you older folks remember him, wrote the poem. He had a mansion of jasper and gold, brightness and glory that cannot be told. But he left it all for a manger bed. He was weary with no place to lay his head. And on Calvary's brow his blood he shed for me. He lived in heaven. The angel band hovered about for his every command. I'm afraid I'm getting too old to try to recite poetry. I'll quit in the middle of that one, but I do have another thought. When I was young, we used to pedal. I don't know how many of you younger ones know what that means. But when the strawberries were ripe, we would take some boxes of strawberries and go from door to door on the streets trying to sell the strawberries. And I would have been 12 or 14 along there, and there was a woman that asked me. Evidently, even at that age, she could realize that I was a Christian. She asked, she said, "How can I enjoy heaven when my husband who just died was an unbeliever? How much I'll miss him." I couldn't give her a good answer at the time, but I believe that I've solved it now. When I was 14, my last year in the grade school, 8 classes in one room, I fell in love with a 12-year-old girl. She had everything a man could desire. She could hit a ball further than I could. And that was about the extent of my feeling what a girl should be like. She moved away. Didn't see her for many years after that. But during the war, we didn't have too much social activities, and I still kept thinking about her for some years. But some years later, I met another girl. And you know, when I got acquainted with her, I didn't think of the first one anymore. It was so much deeper, fuller love than I had had years before. And I can't help thinking that this is what it will be in heaven. I've heard sermons in heaven all my life describing the streets of gold and the palaces. No more sickness, no more suffering. But I believe the biggest thing in heaven is going to be a love that we don't even realize here. A much fuller, deeper love in the things that we miss here in this life, we won't miss anymore. Let's stand for prayer.